This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, the Hockey News Podcast is finally back after a long layoff. We are rested. I'm back from Christmas holidays. Ken is here. Ryan is here, back from the World Juniors. Let's get to it, baby. So much to discuss today. We've got some MVP picks. We have the usual annual Dougie Hamilton trade rumors. But before we get into that, I want to do a quick plug. If you go to newsstands this week, you're going to find a very special product. The Hockey News Money and Power Special Edition. We've never done it like this before. About 150 different people in the hockey industry are profiled. We got profiles on every team owner, the NHL Executive Committee, and of course our annual Top 100 People of Power. It's very exciting. It's very unique. We've never done it like this in the past. And now let's get down to the hockey, the meat, the hot topics. First of all, we are roughly at the season's halfway point, and that's usually cause for some awards chatter. End of the year, we'll do our official picks, we'll cast our votes, but let's talk MVP. I'm sure we'll have lots to say on the topic, so I want to know from you guys, who is your MVP of the NHL season so far?
Well, for me, it's the same MVP that's been the MVP of the players the last 2 years. It's Connor McDavid. And the reason why I say that is because the Edmonton Oilers are an American Hockey League team without him. They really are. They are... I just can't imagine where they would be without Connor McDavid. He drives every bit of offense on that team. You know, I mean, anybody who plays with him starts, having good numbers. He hasn't made the Oilers a better team because he hasn't been able to do it all by himself. But he has been in the face of just immeasurable amounts of turmoil and just mediocrity, has risen above everyone. The one thing I am worried about with him, though, is when does he start getting beaten down? Because the last two games that the Oilers have lost, Ken Hitchcock's gone after his best players. He said after their loss against San Jose, he said, when your best players are minus, you're not going to win. And he called out his best, not by name, but we all know who those players are, and we all know it's Connor. But this is a guy who I think gets it just... I don't know. Maybe it's not a sympathy vote, but man, the guy's got to be. He's the best player in the league, first of all. So if you're going to measure it by who's the best player in the league, he gets it. And I really think that, he is the most valuable, because the Oilers would be, they'd be playing in the Bundesliga without him.
Right. I almost wonder, because last year there was the great debate over whether a player can be the Hart Trophy winner if his team doesn't make the playoffs. But I almost wonder if a lot of those folks this year say, just forget it, it's Connor. It's even worse this year. Just give it to him. Like, we need to recognize the pain and suffering he's going through as an elite hockey player.
It's the Al Rollins thing when he won when he won for the Chicago Blackhawks and they finished in last place, and he was their goalie, but it was almost because he survived all of it,
Right. Now I'm going to go in the exact opposite direction with Nikita Kucherov from the Tampa Bay Lightning. 71 points in 43 games. We've been talking in the first half about how great Mikko Rantanen has been for the Colorado Avalanche. Kucherov has passed him. And I almost feel that at a certain point, there is the argument that he's got a lot of great players surrounding him. But, I mean, when you're that good and you're that deadly, I think you have to acknowledge that those other players are getting shelter by the fact that teams have to think about Nikita Kucherov every second that he's on the ice. And I mean, as hot as he is right now, it's hard to look past such a deadly offensive performer.
Fair. I gotta be a douche. I gotta go full Skip Bayless on this one and say, okay, Connor McDavid, are you the most valuable player to your team if your team is so bad that without you, they would actually be finishing lower and getting a better draft pick? They're not going to make the playoffs. You can make an argument that McDavid's he's hurting the Oilers. That's my joke argument. But one thing, full disclosure, one thing I didn't realize until I was at the awards last year, I was just looking closer at the definitions. The Ted Lindsay Award is not MVP as voted by the players. It's most outstanding player as voted by the players. Right. So there is an award for the best player that can and likely will go to Connor McDavid again. But I think because we know there is an award for the best player, we don't have to give the heart to a guy who misses the playoffs. And I'm looking at Sidney Crosby for so many different reasons. For one, he is putting up some of the best offensive numbers of his career. He's on pace for more than 100 points. But he's doing it with Jake Guentzel and Brian Rust as his wingers versus McKinnon playing with Mikko Rantanen and Kucherov playing with Steven Stamkos. Connor McDavid's most common line mate this year is Leon Draisaitl. Not playing with him all the time, but it has been his most common line mate. Crosby doesn't have nearly the supporting cast, and on top of that, he's playing Selke-caliber defense at forward, winning tons of faceoffs, taking tons of defensive zone faceoffs, and his actual deeper defensive metrics are very similar to Andrei Kopitar's last year. So you're getting the offense from Crosby, weaker supporting cast, team that's on fire, and playing great defense. I think Crosby's been the most valuable player to his team in the NHL this year. It's just me.
No, I get that because, as you say, I mean, he may pull the Sergei Fedorov and be the MVP and the Selke Trophy winner. He's been that good. He will, at the very least, I think, be a Selke finalist this year. And I've talked to people in Pittsburgh who say that he's playing the best hockey that he's played since before the big concussion. Ooh, I mean, he's been that good.
Fair. Interesting. Yeah. Next up, we go back to the trade rumor mill. And come on, Dougie Hamilton again? He likes books, okay? His tastes are refined. And is he an outcast because of that? Is that what's happening again? The fact that he's being mentioned in trade rumors in Carolina, or is it more that they're just disappointed with his play, or they have a surplus of good defensemen with team-friendly contracts? I guess, first off, what do you think is the problem? Is there a problem with Dougie Hamilton, and is it a social situation again that's getting him on the trading block?
I don't know. Does he go to too many museums?
Apparently.
Too soon? Maybe. Yeah,
supposedly.
But I don't know. I think it's more of a function of the fact that they've got four right-handed shots on defense. They've got a guy who's at 5.75, is playing pretty well, actually. He's not... On the ice, he hasn't been a detriment to this team, I don't believe. His possession numbers are pretty good. But what they need offense, right?
Yeah.
So this is a guy that they can trade somewhere to get some offensive talent. Now, what I'm concerned about here is you've got Dougie Hamilton at two more years after this year at 5.75. He's the highest paid defenseman. You know, is Carolina becoming Arizona East? That's what I'm wondering about here. You know, they traded Jeff Skinner a year before his deal was up because they knew they couldn't sign him, and now that deal is looking. I mean, Cliff Pooh, who knows how he's going to turn out, but that deal's not looking good for Carolina. Mm-hmm. And if they do deal him, it'll really tell the direction of where this franchise is going. Like, are they going to deal him for somebody who's going to help him now, a good young player who can score and is going to help him now, or is it all just going to be futures again? Mm-hmm. And if it's all just going to be futures again, then I would argue that Carolina's going down that slippery slope of becoming the Arizona Coyotes East.
Not having made the playoffs in 9 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I know, you know, the new owner, Tom Dundon, is saying he wants to do things the right way and he wants to build this team. He doesn't want to take shortcuts.
Yeah, he wants to. He's the owner.
Yeah. I'm looking at this a little differently right now because in terms of Corsi percentage, he's the best defenseman on the team, second best regular on the team behind Jordan Staal. He plays tough competition. You know, the guys that he's lining up against are Patrick Kane, Artemi Panarin, Jordan Eberle. So, you know, he's doing his job. Now, I'm also looking at little things here. The other night, he was the guy that fished the puck out of the net when Saku Mäntylänen scored his first NHL goal. Mm-hmm. So it was Dougie grabbing the puck to make sure the Mäntylänen had that nice little trophy there. The Canes, they've been doing all the fantastic celebrations this year. Dougie has been involved.
He was flossed. Like, his floss was amazing.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's dancing it up like an 8-year-old. So it seems like he's part of that team. Like, he's doing that social element, if you will. I kind of feel this time that if we're hearing rumors, it might be because he's a really good player that other teams want.
Yeah.
And, you know, can I agree? They need more help up front, particularly at center.
Yep.
As good as Sebastian Aho is, he's not that true dominant center that you need if you're actually
not
going
yet
to contend.
Yep.
Not yet, and I'm not sure I think he's more of a 1B. So if they can turn Dougie Hamilton into something substantial, then I think you make that move, because you're right. I mean, they do have a surplus of great blue liners. But I mean, we know that he hasn't fit in teams in the past. I don't know if that's the case this time. I look at everything, all the evidence in front of me says this is just a really good player that can net you something really good in return.
And, you know, there's some guys that they just get, Like, there's some guys who play for 10 or 12 teams, and you don't know why, and you figure out after their career is over that it's you know, I mean, as much as teams were willing to trade him, there were always a lot of teams that wanted the guy, too. And, yeah. and maybe Dougie Hamilton's just one of those guys who's going to end up playing for 7 or 8 teams throughout the course of his career. I don't know.
Yeah, it happens to a lot of players who are not quite superstars, maybe not quite stars, but they're very good. They're good enough to be valued, but they're not so good that they're untouchable on their team. So
right.
That's why they get traded often. Next up, Habs GM Marc Bergevin this week being asked if he's going to start treating Montreal as a team that might buy because they're right on the cusp of a playoff spot. And he says he's not thinking about rentals. He's still thinking long-term, and he might even consider trading veterans. Personally, I think if I'm a Habs fan, I'm thrilled with that news. It's a sign of evolution. It's a sign that Montreal realized that they were bottoming out and they have to get younger. And yet you see Jesperi Kotkaniemi having an exciting rookie season, Max Domi breaking out, even Jonathan Durant showing signs of life. A lot to kind of get excited about in Montreal. So I'm thrilled if I'm a Habs fan and I hear that, the fact that they're not going to, you know, just get a false sense of hope and do something stupid at the trade deadline.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, if he had said anything else, I think there would have been a massive chorus of no, don't do it. Because, like, I think we need to be realistic here. The Canadians are maybe a playoff team, a periphery team in the playoffs. They're sort of contending for a playoff spot in a conference and a division that's pretty ordinary, right? You know, I mean, it's...
Well, their division's not ordinary.
Their division's not ordinary.
Deadly.
But I think, I don't think anybody is under the impression here that the Canadians are anywhere near being a team that can contend, right?
No.
And, you know, I don't even, depending on the matchup, you know, if they get Tampa in the first round, they're done. If they get the winner of the Metropolitan Division in the first round, if they finish second last in that division, in that conference, then they're still probably done.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think anybody's under any illusions that this is a team that's going to do anything this year. And I think they've done a good job of ridding themselves of some of these young players that they thought were kind of good that really didn't, like the Nikita Sherbaks and the Jacob De La Rosas and stuff like that. They're sort of weeding them out of the organization. That's giving other young players an opportunity to step in. I think, you know, I'm with you, Matt. I just think that it's a situation where they have to kind of keep sort of looking at the future. I mean, sometimes the future never comes, but I think in this case, it would be really unwise to kind of try and patch things up this year.
If the present's weak sauce, then you just, you know, you pass the sauce. I don't know what that means.
Okay.
Sure, bro.
back to normalcy. if I'm Bergevin right now, my only question is to how much do I change this team in terms of shedding contracts? You know, Jordy Benn, perfect UFA candidate where, you know, you trade him at the deadline, you know, maybe you only get a mid-round draft pick or something like that, but you're getting an asset in return from a player that, you know, maybe you don't end up re-signing in the summer. If you really want to get into the rebuild, Jeff Petrie, I think, would fetch some nice futures for you. So that's if you want to take things to another level. Because you're right. I mean, the Habs cannot beat Tampa in a 7-game series. They can't beat Toronto. They can't beat Boston.
They won't beat Washington.
They won't beat Washington. Yeah, yeah. They won't beat Pittsburgh.
Right.
So they're running out of opponents that are playoff teams. But, you know, you look at the World Juniors this year, Ryan Poehling, the MVP of the tournament, Habs pick, could be with them as soon as next year. You know,
could be with them by the end of this year.
Could be with them by the end of this year, although St. Cloud State is the number one team in the country, so if they go far, then the Habs might not be playing hockey by that point.
Right.
You know, Caden Primo, the future in net, played very well for Team USA. Jesse Ylönen played very well for Finland. Alexander Romanov, top defenseman in the tournament for Russia, and he's still quite young. So they've put together some nice drafts under Trevor Timmins. This is the time to be patient.
Right. And when I say their division isn't very good, I mean, I know that Toronto and Tampa Bay are great, but
Buffalo.
Boston, yeah.
Those are the third and fourth best teams in the division.
Yeah, they're okay. And then the rest of the division is terrible. Florida's awful. Detroit's awful. Ottawa's awful. Yep. I mean, so what I'm saying is that they don't have to leapfrog a whole bunch of teams in their own division because there's a lot of bad teams at the bottom of that division.
Right. Fair. Okay.
Just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah,
we'll give you that. Fantasy Insider time. It's been a few weeks, so hopefully you're still in your playoff race. One guy I want you to grab is Kevin Fiala of the Nashville Predators. And that situation where you look at a guy, hopefully, if you had a deep bench, he's a guy that you shouldn't have dropped because he's got the pedigree, first-round pick. And he just, for whatever reason, got off to a very quiet start. He was one of my favorite sleepers entering the year. It just wasn't happening. And suddenly, boom, the switch is back on, and Fiala's hot, 8 points in his past six games. And he was always supposed to do this. It's not a surprise. It wouldn't be a big surprise if he kept up production, maybe not this hot, but pretty strong the rest of the year, and was, you know, a 0.75 points per game guy the rest of the season. So hopefully you hung on to him. Or he's also a great trade target because his overall numbers don't look too great yet. So you could find an owner who's not really paying attention, hasn't looked at what he's done in the last week, and you try and get him for a song in a trade. Another guy to look at is defenseman Erik Gustafsson of the Chicago Blackhawks. 23 points in 40 games, playing huge minutes, and it's a situation of a team that just doesn't have anyone else on that blue line to give the minutes to, especially with Duncan Keith getting a lot older. So he's gotten a tremendous opportunity there. And he's scoring. He's getting power play points. He's got 8 goals. Erik Gustafsson. I'm not convinced that it's going to last all season, but at the same time, the opportunity's there. And when it comes to defensemen in fantasy, especially in a deeper league, if the opportunity's there, that's reason enough to own the player. The last one, I'm embarrassed that I even have to make this recommendation. This is pathetic. Nico Hischier. And yes, 54%, as of the last time I checked, 54% of fantasy leagues don't have Nico Hischier on a roster. And to people
that's
in those,
an outrage.
That's ridiculous.
That's an outrage.
If you're playing one of those leagues, I say, honestly, if you're in a league that doesn't have Nico Hischier on a roster, your league sucks, and you should be ashamed. You should quit the league. It's obviously not challenging enough. You probably have 6 or 8 teams in your league, and everybody's full of superstars. Your league sucks. Pick up Nico Hischier.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
Wow.
Like, that's an embarrassment. If you're playing in a fantasy league where a player that good is available to pick off the wire, that's a crappy fantasy league. I'm sorry. So get out of that league, okay?
Yes.
Okay. Ryan, it's your turn.
All right.
Damn it.
Wow. Okay, yes. So Future Watch, starting with the 2019 draft. I was at the World Juniors, so we got to talk about Kaapo Kakko from Finland, scored the game-winning goal in the gold medal game. And, I mean, he was really good all tournament long. The Finns really found success when they put Eli Tolvanen on a line with Kakko and 2020 draft pick Anton Lundell at center. And it was really the kids lifting up Tolvanen. It was a great switch, and you know, I thought the Nashville pick played very well when he was with the kids. But Kakko still on a better points per game pace than Patrick Laine was in the same age bracket, his same draft year, in the Finnish league. So something to watch for there. They're not the same player. Kakko actually looks up to Mika Rantanen, and he has the similar big body and very good puck protection skills. So I still think Jack Hughes is number one because he's a true center and he's got incredible speed. He was hampered by injury at the tournament and was still a point per game player. But Kakko, I think this is like the Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine draft whoever picks the Finn at number two is going to be very happy. Sticking with the World Juniors for a drafted player, Grigory Denisenko, the Florida Panthers first rounder, made the All-Star team at the World Juniors, helped Russia win bronze. This was the most entertaining Russian team I've seen in person in my hockey news career. And they've had some pretty good players, like Kuznetsov was there, Tarasenko, Panarin. But this squad was so much fun to watch, and Denisenko was a huge driver. He played on a line with Vitaly Kravtsov, the Rangers pick, and Klim Kostin, the St. Louis Blues pick, and they were electric, you know, big bodies. And then Denisenko, he's just a very aggressive, just very talented, quick player. Ended up tied for the tournament lead in scoring, 9 points in 7 games. Fellow Panthers prospect Alexei Heponiemi was the other player that had 9 points. But Denisenko was just so much fun to watch, so talented, so skilled. And I know we always say, when are the Florida Panthers going to get good?
We're still saying it.
We're still saying it.
Yeah, but they on paper, they've got some guys. Henrik Borgstrom, Owen Tippett.
Yeah, soon they have to be good.
Really?
Because they just have
so many good players. I'll take that to the bank.
Yeah.
Riddle me this, Ryan Kennedy.
Yes.
Riddle me this.
Okay.
How do we quantify the season that Jack Hughes is having, playing largely against USHL competition.
Oh, and college.
And college. Yeah. I was going to say, but largely against USA and college. And Capo Caco, who's doing it against men. How do you, like, how, it's interesting to see, like, I'm wondering what a scout would say. Like, how do you sort of, what are the metrics with that? And, like, is there an adjusted scoring or anything like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally do. And I think it's a little subjective because it's not apples and oranges, and you have to look at the role that, you know, players in Europe get. You know, I mean, Kravtsov is actually a very good example because he was only getting so many minutes in Russia, but, you know, the Rangers obviously saw a lot of talent in him, and they saw him get a little more time in the playoffs and go wild last year. Right. You know, with Jack Hughes, I think what you probably do is look at his numbers against the college teams they've played, and they're top-end college teams,
right.
And he's been a huge success. And you even look back at his lineage last year, he was on the under-17 team, but he played a lot with the under-18 team as the number one center with Oliver Wahlstrom and Joel Farabee. They actually reunited that line for a bit in Vancouver, which was fun. But Jack Hughes was still the best player on that team, even though he was a year younger than everybody else, and also playing against college competition. So I think you look at it kind of holistically and and see what they do in different situations, and you're obviously talking to your scouts. But it is a fun debate.
All right. Time to talk magazine, and recently in our most recent issue, it actually was the World Junior Preview, but we had some NHL coverage in there too. Ken, you did a story on the two Joes, Thornton and Pavelski, in San Jose. So just give us a lowdown on what you talked to the Joes about.
Well, it's the two extraordinary Joes, right? Like, I mean, these guys have been the heart and soul of the San Jose Sharks for the better part of more than a decade now, right? They've set the tone there. They've established the culture there, and now we're at a point where they're looking at some crossroads in their careers. I mean, Joe, when I say Joe, I mean Joe Thornton, right? Like when you say Joe, you mean Jumbo Joe. Anyways, I suspect he will be on a series of one-year contracts with the Sharks until both sides think it's not a great idea anymore. And, you know, I do get the sense, though, that Joe Thornton's the kind of guy that, like, he's the Chris Chelios kind of guy. Like, you're going to have to peel the skates off him to make him retire. So that may be an issue going forward. You know, Pavelski's a whole different ball of wax because his contract's up, and it's a real interesting situation. He's the captain there. He wants to stay there. But he's also putting together a pretty damn good year right now. And it was one of the strangest exchanges I've ever had with a player when I talked to him about it. Like, he clearly was not interested in talking about his future or his contract. It was like one word answers, and he was like, "So what do you think, I'm going to retire?" And I was like, "No, I don't think you're going to retire." And then he was like, "Yeah, it's San Jose all the way, man." It was really weird the way. And then he started getting into Patrick Marleau, and you should do a story about how many games he played and everything. And then he just goes, "Nice talk," and he walks away.
Weird.
So it was kind of weird, but huh. I still think that both of them. I think Joe Pavelski's going to be back. I think they realize the value he has to that franchise. And if there's anybody who's going to take a hometown discount, which is what it will be, it won't be an egregious hometown discount. He won't be getting ripped off. But I'm pretty sure Joe Pavelski would take a hometown discount to stay long-term in San Jose.
And my amateur psychoanalysis of Pavelski's weird interaction is it sounds like, in his mind, it's San Jose or retirement. So the fact that there was even an implication of not playing in San Jose, he didn't even think of it. He didn't think of other teams. He was like, "You think I'm going to stop playing hockey?"
Right. No, I don't. No, I don't think you're going to.
Interesting. Very interesting. And Ken, you still have the floor. It's hot take time. It's a bit of a serious hot take this time. So I'm just going to let you get to it.
Yeah, guys, this past weekend in Northern Ontario, there was another bus accident involving another junior A hockey team. Almost 9 months to the day after the Humboldt tragedy, the bus of the French River Rapids of the Northern Ontario Junior League, they were driving late at night. They were almost home. It was like 1:15 in the morning. The driver got blinded by the lights of another vehicle, didn't see a curve in the road, and basically went off the road. The bus went down an 8-foot embankment into a farmer's field. I talked to the owner, the coach of the team, and he said he has no idea how that bus didn't tip. It was just sort of by the grace of God that bus didn't tip over. He said, you know, I mean, thankfully there were no major injuries, few headaches, a few cases of whiplash, stuff strewn all over the bus, and that bus didn't have seatbelts. Okay, My bus didn't have seatbelts. I talked to the owner of the bus, of the bus company that leases the bus to them. This actually was the Sudbury Wolves' old bus. And he said that it would cost about $5,000 to $10,000 to retrofit the bus with seatbelts. And I get that that's a lot of money, especially if you own a bus company and you've got a whole fleet of buses. Mm. I get that that's a lot of money, but my gosh, I mean, like, how many times are we going to have to deal with this? How many times are we going to have to deal with close calls and tragedies before we say, you know, like, I don't understand. I mean, if I'm Hockey Canada and USA Hockey, it's like, any team that's in our, that's under our governing body, you ain't getting on a bus unless it's got seatbelts on it. Mm. And you're, and you, and if you're not wearing those seatbelts and you get in an accident, don't expect our insurance to pay for it. Right. You know what I mean? And to me, it's like, guys, you know, all you minor hockey teams out there, like, don't even think of getting on a bus if it doesn't have seatbelts on it, if you're going to a tournament somewhere. The roads in the winter in Canada are harsh. They're unforgiving. And, you know, I mean, in a place like Northern Ontario, I'm from there. I've driven there a million times. They could have just as easily gone off that highway and careened into a bunch of bedrock. Mm. And, it, you know, I mean, it to me, it's such... you know, it's such a no-brainer. I mean, we, you know, and you can say, oh yeah, we used to, you know, well, they've been doing this for 100 years. They've been, you know, teams have been busing for years and years. Yeah, but, you know, when I was a little kid in the 70s, you know, it was okay for a mother to smoke a dart in the front seat and have her kid in her,
yeah, exactly.
in her hands. But we don't do that anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, please, let's just do it. Let's buckle up and let's be safe.
I'm with you all the way. Good. Couldn't agree more, Kenny Boyd.
Good take.
Good take, yeah, absolutely. No arguments with the hot take there. We're going to go to the mailbag now. And the first question is from Grant. Grant says, what would you expect to be a decent return for Alex Pietrangelo, who might be on the block, we'll see, in St. Louis, from, say, Toronto? I'll give an example because I've been writing a bit about this before. I think if you're St. Louis, if you're trading Alex Pietrangelo or Vladimir Tarasenko, for that matter, it's a waving of a white flag, and I think it's less likely you're doing it to get immediate roster help. I think it's more of a giving up and announcing that we're going to start over. So I think a trade with a team like the Leafs is going to be futures, or at least a package that includes prospects and futures. So I'm going to say Timothy Liljegren, another right-handed shot.
Yeah.
Maybe a decent prospect, someone like a Jeremy Bracco, and I think you're going to need at least one first-round pick. Maybe you go two first-round picks, and the Leafs are an example. They're a great example there, Grant, because they're an ideal trade partner. Because they've amassed so many futures, so many picks, they've reached the point now where they can start giving some away because they've reached that critical mass. If they get any more good young players, they won't be able to afford to keep them anyway. So it's time to start making moves. That would be an example off the top of my head of what might be a realistic return.
See, I wonder about the futures because, like, with St. Louis, I mean, they've been dreadful this year, obviously. Mm. But, I mean, can you just tear it down, like, just by trading Tarasenko and or Pietrangelo? I mean, you've still got a lot of guys that are long-term deals, and there's a core there. And I'm not 100% convinced that this isn't turnaroundable.
Right.
You know, it's. Yeah. I think it could be one of those things where, you know, the turnaround is a lot quicker than it might otherwise be. And so then do you go all futures in that case? You know, do you start asking for roster players from the Leafs? I mean, you're not going to get William Nylander. They said they're not going to trade him, and that would be too much to give up anyways. I don't know, pick your guy. I mean, Zach Hyman, you know, someone like that, someone who can make you a little bit better and give you a dimension that maybe you don't have, so that when this turnaround does happen, you know, if Tarasenko stays, if his luck gets better and if he turns it around, you know, if Jaden Schwartz starts playing better, you know, the Robbie Fabries of the world start, you know, everything starts to come together, then you've got at least one or two guys in the lineup that you can say, okay, these guys can help push this along a little bit.
So maybe hedging the bets. So you're still going to have to include futures in the first round, but also.
Yeah, I think I'd be looking for something that helps right now, too.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at, Jeremy Bracco, I think, is a great chip. He's almost a point per game player in the AHL this year. He's really come on strong for the Toronto Marlies. I was thinking Nikita Zaitsev, because then you're getting a right-handed defenseman to replace Pietrangelo. You're getting a guy who's cheaper, which, you know, helps the Blues, but you also need to offset cost if you're the Leafs.
I think that's more doing the Leafs a favor, with all due respect.
Sure.
Zaitsev is being a liability.
But, he's still, we've seen good Zaitsev in the past. And if the Blues want some, you know, a guy who's under contract for multiple years where you know that slot is taken care of, and, you know, he's a four, you know, maybe a five defenseman, but at least you'd have him locked in. And then you toss in a first or a second round pick, I think. You know, because Petrangelo's got another year on his contract after this one, then you can go for that. But that was sort of what I was looking, almost a hybrid.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. And I wonder if Zaitsev isn't the kind of guy that sort of needs to be somewhere where not everybody follows hockey so closely.
Very true.
You know, I mean, because some guys, they have to do that, and they get dealt away, and they become, like, I don't think anybody's under the impression that Zaitsev is going to be a top two defenseman, but he could maybe be a top four guy on a decent team. And I think if he's playing in a place where every single move and every mistake isn't scrutinized, he might actually bring out better play in him.
That's a good point. Just reminded me of a story. I first met Nikita Zaitsev at the World Cup, 2016 World Cup, and he hadn't played a game for the Leafs yet, but he was about to. And he was almost irritated. Like, I was asking him what he thinks about the North American game. Is he excited? And he was almost like, why are you talking to me? I haven't even played a game yet. And, like, he was almost complaining about the pressure.
How come you're not doing it in your Russian accent?
I don't know.
He doesn't have a thick Russian accent.
For some reason, I felt like I didn't want to. It's like maybe he can only do it with retired players.
That's a demarcation point. I got it.
I decided. I don't know why. I thought about it, though, mid-sentence. I was like, am I doing the impression? Am I doing it? No. Abort. Yeah. But he was, like, irritated, and he was getting philosophical with me. Like, you know, why are we talking about this now? Like, I haven't even played a game. Wow. And that implied, he was already feeling the pressure of being in this market, right? So there you go. Next question is from Hockey Island. As you can guess, someone who has a question about the Islanders. Hockey Island says, are the Isles real? I think Hockey Island means for real. They are a real franchise that exists.
They definitely exist.
Yeah. For the most part. If so, do you see them as buyers at the deadline? Interesting.
No.
Yes and no. Yes, they are for real. Yes, they are for real. Mm-hmm. I think. No, they shouldn't be. No. Should not be buyers at the deadline at all.
Now, when you say for real, do you mean that they can make the playoffs or do something in the playoffs?
No, I mean they're for real in that they can maybe make the playoffs.
And competitive and can sustain it.
That's light years ahead of what we thought for this team.
Oh, totally.
Right? You know, I get that people want to see something from this group, right? Because, I mean, they were, like, we were all convinced at the beginning of the year that Lou Lamoriello was tanking. Mm-hmm. You know, he went out and got, you know, Leo Komarov. He went out and got Matt Martin. Went out and got guys that were, like, as you call them, professional tankers, right? And everything has changed. I mean, the whole dynamic has changed. And, you know, this is a team that is probably a lot better than the sum of its parts. It's getting very, very good goaltending from Grayson Lehner right now. And I just think, you know, it's like the Montreal situation, you know? Be happy with what you've got because it's way better in both cases than anybody ever could have imagined it was going to be.
Yeah.
And just see where this group takes you. Don't get crazy.
Yeah, and I would caution that they're 8-2 in their past 10 games, but the teams they've beaten for the most part, other than the revenge game against the Leafs, have been like Ottawa, Arizona, Chicago. Like, they're not exactly playing the top. They're not beating the top teams.
But every win's worth 2 points.
Very true.
You know?
Yeah, but
and
with the ebbs and flows of the season.
Yeah, yeah.
Ironically, I think the last wild card spot in the East is going to come down to the Islanders in Montreal.
Right.
Interesting. And I look at Lou Lamoriello and his situation with the Leafs a couple years ago, where they were sort of ahead of schedule as well during Matthews' rookie season. But Lamoriello didn't get ahead of himself. He played it relatively conservatively. He made a pretty minor trade for Brian Boyle just to get a bit of help at the deadline.
Yeah.
But he didn't go crazy. And I see a similar situation where the Isles are ahead of schedule. And they've got some nice prospects on the way. Oliver Wahlstrom and Noah Dobson had such a good draft last year. And Kiefer Bellows on the way, too. So they have things to get excited about, on top of already being more competitive than expected. They're getting, like you said, great goaltending. I don't think that's a coincidence because Mitch Korn is there as the guru, right? So I think there's a lot of positive signs. And, of course, Barry Trotz.
Yeah, they have. They might have the best coach in the league.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I think, like you guys said, be happy that you're playing with house money right now, but don't get ahead of yourself. Don't push all the chips in.
I mean, Barry Trotz has kind of ruined all of this, right?
Like, it's true.
It was like, okay, I gave you this team that you're supposed to be lousy with, and, and you went and turned it around, and you're good.
Come on, Barry.
What are you doing?
Yeah, that's fair. That's right. And lastly, we have a question from Denis Beauregard. Dennis Beauregard, if you're not a francophone.
Beauregard.
And Denis asks, is there a future for the All-Star Game? Ken, you have to take this question first because I know you have hashtag thoughts.
Yeah, euthanize it. Kill it. Please. That's its future.
Oh, my God. This is the worst thing in the game.
I have been to the last three All-Star Games, and I'm going to admit, I'm going to say it right here. I haven't watched a single one.
I can corroborate that.
I have not watched a minute of the last three All-Star games. Yeah. I'm not in the press box. I'm down in the press room doing work. I want nothing to do with this farce. And you know what? They've tried everything. They've tried the world against North America. They've tried 3-on-3. They've tried everything. The players don't give a damn about it. I don't see why any of us should give a damn about it. I guess it's just one of those things that's, you know, it's like... Every year, you know, one time every year, you got to invite your drunk uncle over for dinner, and you just have to put up with it. And that's, you know, the All-Star Game is our drunk uncle. We just have to put up with it because it's all for the sponsors. And I get, you know, like I crapped on the All-Star Game, and I got a lot of return for it, and everybody's saying, yeah, but you know, the kids and you know, the people, it's in the San Jose, is gonna love it, and they're gonna have a great time. Okay, so we're gonna have this whole spectacle so like 18,000 people can have a great time. Okay, whatever. But to me, like, is there a future for the All-Star Game? Yeah, kill it.
I mean, realistically, they're always gonna have some sort of All-Star shindig, and I think it is important to note, you know, for the NHL's markets, that it is nice for them to get that spotlight. When you go to a city like Columbus and you see how engaged everybody is, and I'm sure San Jose is going to be the same.
I agree. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a fun thing, and the format always needs tweaking, and you're right. You know, sometimes they got to drag the players kicking and screaming into the skills competition. I remember last year in particular, nobody wanted to be in the fastest skater competition because they all knew McDavid would win. So there was a lot of cajoling just to get people in the competition.
Even that used to be good. Like, the skills competition used to be okay to good.
Yeah.
It sucks now.
I think it's a bit better.
Like, it's hit and miss.
The breakaway, the new save streak was a good addition, I think.
Yes.
Because the challenge is where there can be a record to be beaten.
Right.
Those are the best.
Okay,
That's
that one where they're throwing the puck across the ice into that little net and everything.
Yeah,
it's like, oh my God, am I watching a Yari Burski workout here? You know, like, come on.
Those are the events that are the most skilled, but the least
fun to watch.
And if they go running,
they're not telegenic.
Drew Doughty, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, where Drew Doughty just picked up the puck and he was like, this is ridiculous, right? Like, he couldn't get it over a certain thing.
Yeah,
and
Sagan
had problems with one of them too, and it's just like super awkward.
And then it's
not
a showcase of talent. It makes them look bad.
Yeah.
I think that bothers the players a little bit.
I bet you it does,
The crowd is starting to murmur and you're stuck trying to get the puck over the
little because it's on TV and everybody's, and you know that if you screw this up, it's going to be like, YouTube, watch Tyler Seguin screw up this All-Star competition or whatever.
Here's what I want to see as an event. And Matt, this will resonate more with you than it will with Ken.
Fights. Just have fights.
That'd be hilarious. No. What I was going to say is, you take a page from the old Street Fighter 2 game, and you have an event where you just have an old car. It can be sponsored. Brought to you by Ford. And you just have players from the teams, one on each end. They go
shoot
in time.
Pucks?
They just shoot pucks at the car. They just knock the hell out of it. Just do as much damage as possible to the car.
Cool.
And, like, I don't know if the fans vote on which car is the most destroyed or if there's some sort of metric. Or if you do, like, the old Stamkos. Remember Stamkos did that series of, like, commercials where he would just, like, smash, like, aquariums with his shot and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. Do things like that are just aesthetically pleasing to the eye. Just fun to watch.
And when John Scott was there, he could have just skated into it. Yeah, he would have wrecked it.
How hilarious would it be to just say to the players, like, just break this car however you want, and then you'd have some guys that are just like smashing their sticks over it. Maybe somebody tries to like punch off the rearview mirror. I don't even know what you do. But
imagine you have car breaking injuries at the All-Star
game. Oh, that'd be hilarious. Day to day.
I don't think this is gonna happen. But it's a neat idea.
I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying it should.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Good Street Fighter reference. I was all about E-Honda for that.
Or Chun-Li.
Yeah. Chun-Li or E-Honda, yeah. Blanket was the worst. You had to just, like, electrify yourself to, like, break the bricks.
What are you guys talking about?
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
It's Gen X stuff.
You're speaking a different language, guys.
I don't understand.
Ken.
It's all good. I have a mathematical equation about All-Star Games. It's Larkin's Law of All-Star Games, okay? Uh-huh. The amount of contact in the sport is inversely proportional to the quality of the All-Star Game. So the Pro Bowl is the worst All-Star Game.
Pro Bowl's the worst.
Hockey's second worst. Then probably basketball, and baseball's by far the best.
Right, right.
Because you can replicate the real game.
Unless
the most.
You're Pete Rose wiping out the catcher at home plate in the All-Star game.
That was
pretty wicked.
Okay, everybody, that's it for the Hockey News Podcast this week. Glad to be back. Hope you enjoyed it. And go to thehockeynews.com/gold if you want to learn more about becoming a member, baby.